A fundamental concept in Judaism is the idea that there is a constant renewal that's found within the world around us. Very famous statement that Kadosh Baruch Hu, God, is mechadesh b'tuvo b'chol yom tamin ma'aseh b'reshit. That every day God in His kindness has a renewal in the ma'aseh b'reshit, in the creation of this world. We wake up in the morning and we look outside and we see the tree. We should not feel that the tree is here today because it was here yesterday. But rather, we should have an understanding and a cognizance that God desired the tree to be here today. That God is constantly involved in the creation of the world and is very much a part of all nature of this world that is found here today because God so wills it and God so desires it. And therefore, when looking at Parshas Bereishit, one needs to have this in mind that although the creation story happened 5,761 years ago, the creation story is really happening every single day. There's this active process by Kadosh Baruch Hu himself in the creation of the world. If this is true of nature in general, it is all the more so true in regard to man himself, in regard to the creation of the individual. I'd like to take a look together today at one verse and try to see how we can understand what does it mean that we are recreated every day. How do we go through the process of recreation every day? Let's take a look at the verse, first chapter, verse 26. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. They shall rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and over the animal, the whole earth, and every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." And the key phrase I'd like to discuss today is this concept of "let us make man," na'aseh adam. Very famous question that's asked is, to whom is God talking, "let us make man"? God is one, God is singular and unique. Who is God talking to? And in understanding who God is speaking to, I think it will give us a direction and how we're able to accomplish this aspect of the recreation of man every single day. I'd like to present Rabbi Twersky's understanding that he brings down based on our sages in the book Let Us Make Man. And I think this will become the model for our discussion today. Rabbi Twersky notes, God therefore addressed this newly fashioned lump of clay which was to be man. We can almost imagine this sight, Adam HaRishon lying on the ground as a lump of clay. Medrash speaks about different processes involved with adding the water and mixing it together. We have this lump of clay there. And it's as if God said, "Let us make man. You and I together will make man. I will give you the capacities and the potentials. I will assist you in the process. But the work must ultimately be your own. I can create many things that are perfect from the start, but that is not my concept of man." We can therefore understand why the Talmud often refers to a person who lives a Torah life as being a partner to God in the work of creation. We can see how appropriate this term is, for ultimate man requires a partnership between man and God. Ultimate man, according to the divine plan, can only be with man's participation in his own creation. Na'ase Adam, approach I'd like to take together today, is the approach that man is called. Unlike the many different answers given, Rashi brings down the angels are consulted to show kivyachol the anivus, the modesty of God. But if we take this approach of Na'ase Adam, means man and God together in partnership, God is addressing man and saying, "Let us make man. Together we'll have the ability to create self." That it's not going to be that God is going to make us perfect from the start, but rather we're going to have to work at it, we're going to have to strive, we're going to have to develop. This concept of working together in partnership in order to create self, I think, is the model that we need to keep in mind when we're speaking about being recreated every day. And the question I'd like to address together today is, how do we do this? What is the process involved? What are the models involved in being able to make of ourselves the best possible person we can, with the understanding of Na'ase Adam, that we're in partnership with God, that we have this balance, so to speak, of ourselves with God together, creating the best person we can be? And I'd like to examine this question really on three levels. The first being the most basic understanding of what we learn from Na'aseh Adam, what messages it teaches us for our lives. And then to look much deeper at two prototypes in our parsha of what does it mean to create this balance, this harmony of Na'aseh Adam, of let us make man, man in partnership with God. The first, the most basic level of Na'aseh Adam is really a call to the person to appreciate two things. First, to appreciate the beauty in life itself. That we need to understand every morning we wake up that when we have a breath of life within us, it's God saying, hello, I'm recreating you today, Na'aseh Adam, for you and I to become, to grow together today. As Rabbi Twersky notes in this Let Us Make Man book, he says, the Talmud states that a person is obligated to say, the world was created for me. Young or old, strong or frail, bright or dull, everyone has a reason for existence. As with Shabbos, so with every day of the week, we arise and say Moda Ani, a prayer of gratitude for providing another day of life, a day where, as we're speaking about, God is investing in us. Rabbi Twersky continues, we should say, I am proud and grateful to have the opportunity of fulfilling divine wish. As an individual, my unique purpose and existence could not be fulfilled by anyone else. Even all the great tzaddikim, all the Torah luminaries from the beginning of creation to the end of time, could not accomplish my singular mission in the world, else I would not be in existence. I have a value that transcends any that man can bestow upon me. It is not for me to logically understand my ultimate purpose, but as long as there's breath of life within me, I have significance, I am worthwhile, and that should provide me with a great measure of self-esteem. On the one hand, Na'aseh Adam has to be a call to a person saying, I'm giving you a gift today. It's a gift of life. It's a gift, as Rav Schwab, Zichrono Livracha, Mayan Beit HaShoeva notes, that every individual has to feel that they have a part in the Hitzgalut Kvodo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the revelation of godliness, Shetavo Rak Al Yado V'lo Yidei Shum Nivraz L'Oto, that can only come about in this world through this individual and through absolutely nobody else. Chashuv Ani Ke'olam Malei, as Rashi notes, I am as important as the whole world. And this attitude has to be an attitude that permeates every moment and every hour of our lives. As the Nesiva Shalom points out so beautifully, that a person has to understand, based on the writings of the Arizal, that every year, every day, every hour has a special aspect that's unique for that time. And he says, V'hainu shelechol yom v'yom, for every day, v'lechol sha'ah v'sha'ah, and every hour, yish tafki miyuchad, there's a certain aspect we need to create, there's a certain job that needs to be got done. She'i efshar lemalei bizman acher, that cannot possibly happen at any other time. And therefore, every person that Kadosh Baruch Hu creates with a special job has to understand that it's for him alone at this particular hour, with these particular considerations, to accomplish this. This is the model we need on one level to understand the Na'aseh Adam. It's God investing in man. It's man's understanding that there's something to accomplish in this world, something special to do in this world. The flip side of this is for man to understand that whatever he does in this world is done in partnership with God, is done in order to serve God. And this is the famous statement that the Shulchan Aruch begins with. The first law in the Shulchan Aruch is Yiskaber Ka'ari, one should awaken like a lion in the morning to do the service of God. That a person should be Ma'orer HaShachar, he should wake the dawn. And as Chavetz Chaim, the Mishnah Berurah, notes on this, he says the person in the winter time shouldn't say, oh, it's so cold, how can I get up? In the summertime, he shouldn't say, oh, just a couple more hours or a couple more minutes of sleep. But a person should imagine to themselves, imagine if you have an appointment with the king that day, how fast you would get up, how fast you would get up to prepare yourself and make sure you're ready for that appointment. How much more so in our relationship to God. And we know how true this is, that if we have a plane to catch, we have a very important meeting, we get up especially early, we prepare ourselves, we're all ready. And that's how we have to look at every day of our lives. Every day is that recreation of Nasa Adam, let us create man. Every day when we wake up and we recognize that God has given back our soul, Shechazarta bi nishmati, our soul is returned to us, then we have to understand that we're here for a function, we're here for a purpose, and every day we have to use that. And every day we're in partnership with God to be able to create the best world possible. That explains a very interesting, intriguing statement in the Gemara Chagiga, which states, Me'uvat lo yuchal litkon, that which is crooked cannot be straightened. Explains the Gemara, this is one who is Shibitel Kriyat Shema Shel Shachrit or Kriyat Shema Shel Arvit. One who did not say the Kriyat Shema of Shachrit in the morning or the Kriyat Shema of Mariv in the evening. The same statement, because we know that you can't fix it. It's not something crooked, can't be straightened. We know that if you miss davening, you're able to daven the next davening twice. So what does this mean? Someone who's missed Kriyat Shema, saying the Shema in the morning or the evening. So Sifti Chaim, based on Rav Chaim of Volozhin, explains it on a metaphysical statement on a much different level. It means that life is about every morning and every evening be mekabel omachut shamayim. Saying Kriyat Shema means accepting the yoke of heaven upon us, understanding we have a mission to do in this world. We have something to accomplish that nobody else could accomplish. And even if we've accomplished a lot in our lives, and he likens it to the model of a ladder, where every day is a different rung on the ladder. Every day when we understand that we're here to serve God and to perfect ourselves is a different rung on the ladder. No matter how many rungs we have on the ladder, if we've missed a day, if we miss the opportunity of understanding and being cognizant of the fact that we're here to serve God, the Nasa Adam, to make the best of our soul in partnership with God, so that no matter how far the ladder has reached, there will always be rungs that are missing. It can never be made up. Every day, every opportunity is a time to be Nasa Adam. That call has to resonate within us at all times. On a practical level, this means one of two things. On the first level, it means that we constantly involve God in our partnership. As the Nesiva Shalom says so beautifully, that we know that all the words of the Torah are eternal, and therefore the statement when God says, Yehi Yor, let there be light, and there was light, it's really a statement of a much larger call. Explains in the Nesiva Shalom, if a Jew finds himself b'chashkud, in darkness, he should say, Ribono Shel Olam, God, ani mevakesh shimcha, I ask of you, Yehi Yor, let there be light. And we say, a man should say to God, how long do you want me to stay in this darkness? I am unable myself to get out of this darkness. Rechem alai, have mercy on me. Vaher ata einai v'libi lerot barcha or, and allow me that my heart and my eyes should be able to see light. And then, vayhi or, there will be light. Ozer lo Hashem yitbarach u'meir lo, and then God will help and enlighten this person. So on the first level, on a practical level, this partnership between ourselves and God, and the Nasa Adam, and the creation, the formation of ourselves, and the perfection of selves, is to always recognize that God is part of the partnership. And on a practical level, that means enlisting God at all times, having a conversation with God throughout our day. If difficulties arise, we say, Yehi Yor, please, God, Rachem Alai, have mercy on me. I can't get out of here without you. We're in partnership together. Nasa Adam, please, God, help me. Vayehi Yor, and there will be light. I think the second aspect, on a practical level, what it means to be in Nasa Adam, to be in constant formation, this renewal on a constant level, is to always be involved in growth, to always be looking for ways to become a better person. Every day to say, Nasa Adam, how can I make the best of my day? And I think a wonderful insight where we see the depth of this concept is found in an insight of the Klayakar on a verse in reference to Cain. Right after Cain has this edict placed upon him that he will be Nava Nad, a wanderer in the land, the pasuk says, "Vayeshev be'eretz Nod," and Cain sat in the land of Nod, Kidmat Eden, to the east of Eden. And likewise, we know that Adam, the pasuk says, when he was thrown out, Vayashkeim mikedem lagan Eden, he was placed, he lived, mikedem, to the east of the Garden of Eden. What is the concept of going east? So on a symbolic level, explains the Klei Yakar, that when one kills a person, like Cain killing Hevel, or Adam who brought death into the world, so it's almost a symbolic model that a person's life is symbolized by a sun, where it rises in the east and sets in the west, and a person's life can almost be compared to a whole day of the rising, the height, and then the setting. It's a very powerful imagery. By killing somebody, Rahman al-Islam, earlier, a person's life is extinguished earlier, it's as if the person's sun has set. That's the model. And therefore, says the Klei Yakar, since a person caused death in the world, or Cain caused Hevel's sun to set earlier in the west, so therefore he needs to go to the opposite extreme, which is to the east. That the east represents the opposite of the setting of the sun in the west. And this is true in life, that in life one has to go to the opposite extent. Continues the Klei Yakar, v'hu derech kol balei tshuva, lahatot likseh ha'charon b'davar shechatabo, v'lasot eze mitzvah hefechit el ha'vera shasa. Explains the Klei Yakar, a person who's a Baal Tshuva who wants to return needs to go to the opposite extreme in the very aspect that he sinned in. But here comes the chiddush, the novel idea in the Klei Yakar. To do a mitzvah, which is the counter effect of the aveira that a person has done. Just like Cain went to the east, which is the opposite of the west, we need to involve ourselves in mitzvah performance, which is the counter effect of whatever we've done wrong. Which means, if a person is involved in hurting somebody else through speech, so it's not just enough to say, okay, I feel bad, and try to get forgiveness, and go through the whole process of tshuva. But one should go one step further if you're involved really in growth, of the Nas Adam of let us make man, and now involve yourself and take that same area, particularly in the area of speech, and work on using speech to encourage other people. Work on speech to build other people up, to help other people out. If one sins through money, through stealing, then use that money to help other people out. In the very same area that one has sinned, in that area itself, one has to find the tikkun, one has to find the rectification. Life is about the balance of not only trying to wipe the slate clean, but if you're involved in self-growth, and nasa adam, in creating oneself, so then one should invest and realize, where is the area of weakness? Now, how can I take that same energy in the same area and dedicate it for growth? This is level number one. Nasa adam is the call that we have to understand, that life is about God investing in us, that we're in partnership with God, we utilize God in this partnership, we understand we have a unique mission to do, and we're constantly involved in trying to become better people every single day of our lives, this constant renewal. I'd like to try to suggest a second and third level of Nasa Adam, which is a little bit deeper in the understanding of a partnership with God and how we create ourselves, how we're able every day to go through this renewal of becoming better people in partnership with God. The second level is based on Rabbi Bezdin's, is based on Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha's essay, Lowly Man of Faith, which is adapted by Rabbi Bezdin in Man of Faith in the Modern World. It's an essay which deserves much larger attention than the number of moments given today. But the essential part of the essay I'd like to give over, because I believe it's our second prototype of Nasa Adam. And that is, the Rav notes, the two differences in the description of how Adam HaRishon, how the first man was created. If we look in the first chapter of the book of Bereishit, we notice the Torah tells us that God, using the name Elohim, created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fertile and multiply and fill the land and subdue it, v'kivshua, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, and over every beast that walks upon the earth. So clearly, the first description of the way man is created is in the image of God. Male and female are created together, and the charge to have dominion, v'kivshua, over this world, subdue this world. If we look at the second chapter of Bereishit, it's a completely different description. The Torah tells us the eternal God, Hashem Elohim, formed man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils a breath of life. And man thus became a living soul. The eternal God planted a garden in Eden to the east. There he placed the man that he had formed to cultivate it and to watch it. We look at this description, we find out, first of all, how man is created from the dust of the ground. We also found that man is given a different charge here. He's given the charge to cultivate it and to watch it. And in this case, woman is not created with man. It's only after man feels its loneliness and God says, "Lo tov hayot adam levado," it's not good for man to be alone, that we finally find that Eve is created, Chav is created from Adam himself. And that's why the Rav says that there are really four major discrepancies between these two accounts. One is man's formation. While in the first chapter he's created in the image of God, B'Tzelem Elohim, the second he's fashioned from the dust of the ground with God breathing into him a breath of life. The assignment is different, and the first one is to subdue and have dominion over the world. The second is to cultivate it and to watch it. In the first story, both sexes were created simultaneously. The second story, Adam emerged alone, with Chava coming subsequently as a helpmate, as an Ezer Kenegdo. The names of God, in the first case, it's just using Elohim, in the second, Hashem Elohim. And therefore, the Rav posits a very famous understanding that we're dealing with two prototypes of man. The first he calls Adam 1, Adam from chapter 1, and the second Adam 2, Adam from chapter 2. Very briefly, the Rav describes the differences between both of these men, the prototypes of these men, of these individuals, based on the verses and based on the characteristics that are found in each verse. And he explains that Adam 1 is interested in just one aspect of reality and asks only one question. How does the cosmos work? He's not fascinated by the question, why does the cosmos function at all? Nor is he interested in what is the meaning or purpose. His sole motivation is to know how it works. He raises not metaphysical, but only practical and technical questions. Adam 1 wants to be a man, to realize his humanity by being distinguishable from the rest of creation, by becoming the master of his environment, which grants him an honorable status with dignity. Dignity is equated by the psalmist with man's capability of dominating his environment and exercising control over it. Adam the second, like Adam the first, is also intrigued by the cosmos to explain the mysterious magnum of existence. While the cosmos provokes Adam 1 to seek power and control, Adam 1 would be the one who wants to be the first man on the moon, to conquer all diseases, to be able to build the fastest computer possible. Continuing in the Rav, Adam 2 responds to a different cognitive gesture. He does not ask functional questions which will help him to use the forces of nature. He does not ask why. He does not ask how or what, but why and who. He wonders, why was the world created? From the depths of my being, I sense a message and challenge being directed at me. What is it? Who is it who trails me steadily like a persistent shadow? Who is it to whom I cling in all passionate, all-consuming love, and whom I feel immortal fear? These are the questions that Adam 2 asks. While dignity is the goal of Adam 1, Adam 2 aspires for holiness and is faith-oriented. And that's why the Rav points out Adam 1 is created B'Tzelem Elohim, in the image of God, which refers to his intellectual endowment, while Adam 2 has a breath of life breathed into him, which suggests an experiential closeness to God. This is the difference between Adam 1 and Adam 2. It would be very much like the difference between a poet and a scientist that are looking at the same tree. While a poet in Adam 2 would look at the tree and say, ooh, look at the beautiful trunk and the beautiful leaves and the beautiful shape of the tree, and it's so inspiring. And Adam 1, a scientist, will look at it by saying, this is how old the tree is, and this is the type of tree it is, and it's related to this type of tree. They look at the same tree, but with a totally different vantage point. The Rav continues, that explains as well the concept of the woman, the helpmate. Eve was created together with Adam, male and female. He created them, He was not alone on the very first day of his creation. Why does Adam 1 need company? Being practical-minded, he needs help in responding to an often hostile, resistant environment. Helpless individuals realize they cannot cope with life's multifarious needs and challenges when acting alone. Partnerships are formed. Adam and Eve work together, yet each retains an I identity, not a we awareness. They communicate and satisfy each other's practical needs, but are not bound to each other emotionally. Their inner depth personalities do not connect. While Adam 2 clearly is one who experiences this unbearable solitude, and therefore contributes part of his being in the formation of a soulmate, someone with whom he can communicate, a reflective counterpart of himself. With her, he can form a faith community, not merely a work community. A faith community is three persona, the I, the thou, and the he, which is God, which are joined together in a covenantal commitment which is established through prophecy and prayer. This is the difference between Adam 1 and Adam 2. But here comes the key. Says the Rav, we've been describing both Adams typologically as though they were irreconcilable, separate persons with disparate temperaments and orientations. Actually, there's only one Adam with oscillating tendencies. The man of faith in actuality moves regularly between the faith community and the work community. He never remains totally immersed in the immediate awareness of being in God's presence. There's a continuous alternation between the cosmic and the covenantal, both areas being willed and sanctioned by God, who wants man to live creatively in this world, even as he devoutly participates in the faith community. I think this becomes for us the model, or the second level, of what Nasa Adam is about. Nasa Adam is the ability for man to work in partnership with God. What does this mean? So on this level, this prototype of Adam 1 and Adam 2, it means that on the one hand, we're very much involved, Nasa Adam, of being the best people we can be, of growing, of being creative, of having dominion over this world, of being able to produce something that is so unique and so special that leaves our mark on this world. The Tzelem Elohim, the intellectual aspect. But at one and the same time, we are never to lose sight of the Nasa Adam is let us make man. We are in partnership with God who endows us with the ability to do that which we do. And therefore, whatever we are involved with in this world, we need to feel that intimate relationship with God. We need to feel that closeness with God. So any individual who perhaps has a tendency in one Adam over the other Adam, and everyone has more of a tendency in their life, they need to balance it. That if they feel that they're going to control and be able to produce something in this world, never forget that closeness to God. And one who's going to spend their whole day just in this covenantal community of closeness of God should also understand they have to bring it to this world and be involved in giving and allowing oneself to contribute to this world as well. We are a synthesis of both Adam 1 and Adam 2. The Nasa Adam means we need to develop as the best people we can be, using the Tzelem Elohim, but with partnership with God, with relationship with God, with closeness with God. That's model number two of Nasa Adam, where every individual needs to take their Adam 1 and Adam 2 aspects, form them together to every day be a Nasa Adam, let us create man, let us have this perfect balance in our work relationship and our God relationship as well. And then comes the third and final level. It's based on the writings of Lubavitcher Rebbe Zichrono Livracha, which has been adapted by Rabbi Tauber in the book The Insight Story. He notes that the Torah names three of Adam's children, Cain, Hevel, and Chait. Two, Cain and Chait, survived to marry an established progeny. We know that Cain killed Hevel out of jealousy, that his sacrifice was accepted while Cain's was not. Generations later, Noach, a descendant of Shait, married Naamah, a great-great-great-granddaughter of Cain. Noach and Naamah and their three children and daughter-in-laws are the ones who survived the flood. So Cain and Shait are the respective maternal and paternal grandfathers of every human being alive today. Each and every one of us has a little part of Cain in them and a little part of Shait in them. But explains Lubavitcher Rebbe so beautifully that Cain and Chait and the personalities can really be understood on a symbolic level as a prototype of two different types of people. Cain, we know. Cain's jealousy for his brother, who's then punished by God of being navanad, of wandering in this world. Cain is banished to a life of wandering and homelessness for his murder of Hevel. He is the essence of volatility and rootlessness. As for Shait, the third son of Adam and Chava, the Torah tells us virtually nothing about his life in person, but his very name connotes stability and constructiveness. Shait, say our sages, was so named because upon him the world was founded. Shait is Hebrew for to set or to establish. After the killing of Hevel and the banishment of Cain, human civilization finally indeed, these two modes of being converge in every man. At the heart of the human psyche is the yen for stability, the gravitation to root civilization and productive life. Yet no less entrenched in our souls is the quest for transcendence, the drive to escape the strictures of ordered life, to soar unencumbered by function or identity in unbounded flights of spirit. So a beautiful description. The Rebbe understands Cain to be, not in the negative sense, the wanderer, but in the positive sense, a prototype of transcendent, a prototype of rootlessness in the positive sense of always trying to grow, never staying in one place, while Shade is a prototype of being able to be established and put in one place. The Rebbe says if we would examine the three major pillars of this world, Torah, prayer, and doing good deeds, we can find how one can approach these three from a Cain aspect, and one can approach these three from a Shait aspect. So he says, for example, to study Torah is to learn how to live, to master the code that facilitates the optimal development of our inner potential and the world's resources. That is to study Torah in a Shait way. Tell me what to do. Tell me how to do it. But learning for the sake of learning, for the sole aim of acquiring the wisdom of Torah and cleaving to its divine conceiver. The Torah scholar that explores the rationale behind rejected minority opinions with the same fervor as he examines a final ruling and painstakingly analyzes hypothetical laws, which will never occasion to be implemented in actuality, is really the way Cain would study it, as a freeing of the mind from the narrow confines of concrete reality. Shait, the very practical-oriented. Cain, the more transcendental-oriented. And the same is true of prayer. The Shait aspect is the procurement of the ingredients of life, asking God for wisdom, health, sustenance, atonement, redemption. But there's another aspect to prayer. It's the Cain aspect. It's an endeavor to transcend the mundane aspects of life, the physical trappings of life. Rabbi Mendel, in his book, My Prayer, describes this so beautifully in the imagery of a candle. You know, the pasuk in Mishlei, the candle of God, is the soul of man. Now, we know that the flame of a candle is restless, striving upwards to break away, as it were, from the wick and body of the candle. That flame trying to move upwards is the Cain. The wick and the candle itself is really the Shait. Prayer is the means where we try that flame to attach ourselves to God. And that's why he notes that Jews automatically, almost naturally, seem to pray while they daven, while they learn, because it's that inner spark, that inner flame that's trying to transcend the physical, trying to transcend the body. It's trying to immerse oneself, to connect oneself, to be absorbed into the larger flame. And likewise, in the doing of mitzvahs. One can do mitzvahs on a Shait level, which is to refine one's character, to cultivate the good in our character, weed out the bad, to civilize society. Or the mitzvah is also described as the pure expression of divine will, transcending all rationale, motive, and utility. We therefore do a mitzvah because God commanded it, not for its impact, pragmatic or spiritual, on our lives. In this sense, the mitzvah is the ultimate act of transcendence. So we see here two models. The model of Cain to be involved in transcendence in life, and the model of Shait to be very much involved in the rooted in the here and now. But here the Rebbe notes something very important, and it's the same conclusion we reached with the Rav moments ago. The Rebbe explains that it's very fascinating that both Cain and Shet have either a child or a future descendant with the same name, the name of Chanoch, and each one of them is a diametric opposite of their ancestor, of their patriarch. Let's explain. What happens to Cain when he leaves God? So the verse tells us, and Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Chanoch. Cain was then building a city, and he called the city after the name of his son Chanoch. Just like that, parenthetically, the Baal HaKtava Kabbalah notes so beautifully that why did Cain name his son Chanoch? So he explains that the very powerful message for our lives is that Cain really wanted to do tshuva, to repent after what he did. And what he therefore does is calls his son Chanoch, which means education, so that he can remind himself the shem zeh yelo la'od v'siman. It should always be assigned to him, to me, or constantly. La'askiro, to remind him, shu kitino kanisrach alechinuch v'regilur. It's like a little child who always needs education, always needs dedication. Litragel ma'ad ma'at litkarev al Hashem, to slowly be able to come closer to God. And therefore, at every hour that he mentions this name, he will therefore be awakened to think about what this name means and how he needs to draw himself closer to God. Every time he would say his name, son's name, Chanoch, every time he would call the city Chanoch, it would remind him he needs to dedicate himself and educate himself slowly in coming back to God. Be that as it may, going back to the Rebbe, he notes something very interesting. Cain fathering a child, Cain building a city. In this one verse, we meet a Cain engaged in the most un-Cain activity, creating a life and a settlement, both named Chanoch. So Cain, who is this symbol of rootlessness, is involved in a very much stable aspect. Chanoch represents stability, a child, a city. The Chanoch is a diametric opposite of what Cain represents. And likewise, Shet's great-great-great-grandson, Chanoch, strikes a similar contrast to his ancestor. We know Chanoch had a very short lifespan, 365 years, compared to the normal 900 years of his contemporary. The Torah tells us that Chanoch walked with God, and then he was no longer for God had taken him. And our sages explain, Chanoch had secluded himself from his wicked generation, disdaining all involvement with the outside world. Still being the only righteous man in his generation meant that he was in perpetual danger of being corrupted. It's for this reason that God took him before his time, lest he too fall to iniquity. This Chanoch is everything that Shet is not. Escape from the material world, escape from society, and finally, flight from light itself, life itself. So here once again you have Shet, who represents this concept of stability, this prototype, has a descendant Chanoch, the same name, who represents the exact opposite. One who flees from the material world, someone who's very much a Cain-like aspect. What does this tell us about the Cain and Shet within us? And this is the key. That these are not to be two segments of a bifurcated self, each with its distinct areas and moments of life. Rather, the Cain in us is to be tempered with the constructiveness that its Chanoch represents, while our stable Shet is to be charged with the transcendent energy that his Chanoch embodies. Life is about being able to combine the two. A Cain needs his Chanoch, and a Shet needs his Chanoch. And the Rebbe goes through, which we'll do very briefly, then all those three areas we mentioned before, you need to have the balance. When one's learning Torah for the practical-oriented, the Shet-oriented, you have to see the transcendental. You have to have the Shet Chanoch there as well to realize that learning means relationship with God. And likewise, in learning a Cain aspect of just trying to learn the obscure aspects of law to connect to God, you also have to be very much rooted, the Chanoch of the Cain, in this world of the practical of what to do. Likewise, in prayer, the most transcendent flights of Cain prayer must be with a mind to return to earth. Simply escaping one's material identity will not bring one any closer to God. If the divine will is that man should serve him as a physical being with a physical life. In the words of our sages, while praying, one should set his eyes downward and his heart upward. Even as his heart soars in the ecstasy of prayer, it must be with the intention to apply the experience to earthly life. On the other hand, when a Jew requests his needs from God, the shade aspect, he must be ever conscious of the ultimate purpose, and that is to be able to serve God better. It's a beautiful story that Rabbi Klon tells about his own brother, who visited the Manchester Rav Zichrono Livracha, was very close to him, and stayed at his house for a number of days. When he took leave, he asked for mechila from the Rav. He asked for forgiveness. The Rav said, "You don't need mechila, there's nothing that you've done." So Rabbi Klon's brother explained, he says, "I'll tell you, I saw that the way you daven was such fervor, such intensity, this transcendental aspect we were speaking about, that one morning I took your siddur, and in the margin I wrote my name by the bracha, the blessing that God should grant wisdom. And I wanted you to daven for me that God should give me wisdom. So I'm apologizing for writing in your siddur, it was really wrong of me." So explains the Manchester Rav, he says, "I have to apologize to you. I didn't even see that you had put your name there. You have to understand that when I daven, I do not have my eyes leave the line that I am on. I read word from word, and my eyes don't veer into the margins. I didn't even notice that you had put your name in the margin." And this is what we're speaking about. The most greatest, loftiest type of prayers are very much rooted in the line by line, word by word, that we don't get so caught up in the transcendental that we forget the concrete, the here and now, the every word. That's the balance that we need to strike. And likewise, regarding the mitzvot as well, the kind endeavor to cleave to God through the fulfillment of His will can be achieved only through the physical acts and objects, and the discipline, order, and attention to detail. If a single drop of ink is missing from a letter, one's tefillah. If the lulav falls 1 millimeter short of its halakhically ordained length. If the shema is recited a single second after its halakhically ordained time, no mitzvah has been performed, no transcendence has been achieved. On the other hand, the development of the physical reality, the shade objective of the mitzvot, can only be optimally achieved if one is constantly involved in growing and trying to rise above the here and now, where we are in now. And therefore, the Rebbe concludes, "So the escapist nomad and the realist developer in us are integrally intertwined. No kind is truly kind without his shade chanoch, and no shade is completely shade without his kind chanoch. Every quest for truth must transcend the preconceptions of convention and ego, but must also test its viability through application to concrete reality. Every effort to sustain life must be permeated with a sense of meaning and purpose that transcends mere existence. But the highest spiritual goal must enlist the materials of earthly life as the implements of its realization. Every deed must be driven by a transcendent vision, but must also follow an ordered, pragmatic course if its endeavor is to succeed and its impact is to endure." And I think this is the third model for us. The model of Nasa Adam, that let us make man, is this duality, where on the one hand we need to be a sheit, we need to be someone who's going to be involved in building in this world, being very much involved in the concrete, in the here and now. But every sheit has its chanoch, every kain has its chanoch as well. We need to be kain as well. We need to feel this transcendental relationship. The Nasa Adam, let us make man, we need to feel that in our lives, that whatever we do, we have to bring it to a higher level. We have to understand our lives are about connecting ourselves to God. Our lives are about a partnership with God. We can't do it alone. Whatever we are involved in the here and now, and we need to be involved in the here and now, but it has to be tempered in balance with the transcendental, with the feeling of closeness to God as well. And I think that this, all three models can really be summed up in what the way our rabbis describe where Adam got his name from, where man got his name from. Adam comes from two words. It comes from the word Adama, the ground, or it comes from the word Adameh, to be likened, Adama el Yom, to be likened to God. Nasa Adam, the call, the charge of Nasa Adam, is the call, on the one hand, to be very much rooted in this world, to be the Adam one, the Kishua, having dominion, the intellectual aspect of the Tzelem Elohim, have the shade aspect of being one who's very concrete oriented in Torah, in prayer, and in mitzvot, which is so important in this world, to develop ourselves in the here and now in the concrete. But there's also an aspect of Adam, of Adam Elyon, to always be striving to emulate God, to be the Adam too, who feels the Nishmat Elohim, the soul of God, breathed into him. who feels this closeness to God permeating within him, who has this kind aspect of transcendence that pulsates within him as well, of trying to soar above the here and now into a relationship of godliness, into spirituality. Adam is a synthesis of Adama and Adames. Adam is a synthesis of both, that life has to be practically oriented. We have to be involved in growing, developing, and being creative. But if we lack the spiritual feeling, if we lack the feeling that we're here for a higher purpose, we're here for a higher mission, that every day is saying a Kriyat Shema, every day is feeling the yoke of God on us, that every day, as we saw the Arizal says, has a major power that can only be found in that particular day. If we feel that every day, if we feel that call of Nasa Adav, that God is investing in us, that we realize that our lives have meaning beyond the here and now of importance, that God invests in us and that we work in partnership in God, so we elevate the Adama to the Adama. We elevate the physical to something much greater than that. We understand that the physical life we are leading has a spiritual aspect to it, and we need to temper that one with each other. That when I give Stucca to pause for a moment and feel how you can transform a coin into eternity, how I can transform food into a blessing into eternity, and yet I'm able to take that blessing and put it into something so physical as food. I can take Nitzchias, something eternal, and put it into something concrete as a dime, as a nickel. And I therefore think in conclusion that our challenge is to feel as if every morning we get woken up to the phone ringing that wakes us up. And as if, kivyachol, we have the following conversation every morning, half awake, half asleep, we pick up the phone and we say, hello, good morning, who is this? It's as if, kivyachol, Kadosh Baruch Hu responds and says, good morning, this is God. One thing to tell you this morning, two words, Nasa Adam, let us make man, you and I together. I'm investing in you, and I know that you are going to create today, you're going to make this day worthwhile, that you will grow as an individual, and you understand you are growing, Nasa Adam, in partnership with me. You understand that whatever you're going to accomplish today in the realm of Adama and the realm of the concrete is going to have to be elevated to the Adama, the level of God. And I'm here to help you. I'm here to have a relationship with you. I'm here to inspire you. I'm here to give you the tools. Let's work in partnership together. We then get up in the morning and we say, Modani, we're grateful for this opportunity and we're looking forward to the opportunity of Nasa Adam, let us make man, where man and God together can create the best human being we can possibly.